Hey, health junkies. It's time for The Health Fix. Join your host, Dr. Janine Krause, as she gives you a dose of what you need to know and do right now to take control of your health from the inside out, to rebel against aging, look damn good, fight stress, and laugh every day.
Hello there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause. In today's episode, we are going to be talking all about circadian rhythms and how they relate to your longevity and overall happiness. So the reason I'm kind of going into this today is that we are starting to go into fall right now. And in fall, we're starting to, of course, have shorter days. And we're seeing darkness in the morning, and we're getting darker earlier in the evening. And that can really mess with some people, and especially if you live in more northern latitudes, such as Washington State, like I do, you will see that you have some trouble waking up, and sometimes you feel a little depressed. And a lot of people actually suffer from seasonal affective disorder. In fact, one resource I found said 25% of healthy individuals experience mood change associated with shorter days in the fall and winter. And so that's a big deal. The National Alliance on Mental Health actually notes that 16 million, or 7% of the American population, experienced one episode of major depression in the last year. So we've got a lot of seasonal affective disorder, but we also have episodes of depression that typically tend to go along with the fall and winter months. Now, what gives here? What's the deal? Well, we are still cavemen. We respond to rhythms of light and darkness. As most of us probably know, we tend to secrete cortisol to wake us up, and melatonin to keep us asleep. And the way we know how much cortisol we need to be releasing is through circadian rhythms. And typically in the morning is when we release cortisol, and in the evening we start to produce melatonin, and it's related directly to light. And unfortunately, because we live in a society when there is pretty much light available all the time, thanks to our computer screens, our tablets, our phones, and TVs, we've got some issues that we're dealing with in terms of messing with our syncing to circadian rhythms. And so in a lot of conditions that I see where folks have seasonal affective disorder, I'm usually working with them to help with their exposure to light and darkness. And it's kind of a fun thing, and I'm going to talk a little bit about it today, but I think that I want to geek out a little bit first and talk a little bit about light and how this works. So light, of course, is a signal, like I mentioned, for sleep and wake for the brain. And in fact, melatonin release typically starts around 9 p.m. and ends at 7:30 a.m. And if anyone's doing shift work, of course, that's going to be a little confusing to your brain. And if you've worked shift work for a long time, you can actually reset your circadian rhythms. But if you're working shift work and then on the weekends you change things, or say you're flying overnight, like you're a flight attendant and you do a lot of red-eye flights, you could have some serious issues because you might be flying 3 days a week and the rest of the time you're trying to sync to a regular schedule. Or nurses that work overnight. I find this being pretty common too, because nurses will work typically 12 to 16 hour shifts. And what ends up happening is when they're off shift, they go back to their regular wake up in the morning, go back, try to go to bed at night type of schedule. And that can really mess with you from kind of trying to switch back and forth. Because being cavemen, we like routine. So humans are responding to this light that comes in. It comes into your retina, and it's going to travel down your optic nerve. So that's how you see, your optic nerve. It's what registers in the brain. And that optic nerve has a connection to the master clock, or the conductor, as I kind of see it. And it's known as the suprachiasmatic nucleus. And that's in your hypothalamus. So this is in the center of your brain. And the hypothalamus is mission control for a lot of hormone processes. So light change can actually affect how many hormones you produce, from testosterone to estrogen to progesterone to thyroid hormones even. And so this is a big deal in terms of how we sync to light and dark. And that's why I really highlight screen time and how much usage of cell phones in the evening and tablets that people have, because unfortunately, we're still cavemen. And if we're messing with our light and dark rhythms, we can be messing with our hormones as well. And a lot of people will come in my office and want me to give them a fix in terms of herbs or something that's going to regulate hormones. But when I look at their circadian rhythms, I find that it might be a simpler change than that, where they don't have to take a bunch of herbs. So something to think about here. So knowing that our nerves and our hormones respond to circadian rhythms, this miscommunication of the nervous system and the miscommunication of the hormones can be quite a big deal when related to being stuck in fight or flight responses. Most of us are living lives that are a little bit stressful because, well, we're still cavemen, and all of the fast things that are coming at us, from traffic to a lot of social stimulus, social media, having to be on and talking to people all the time and not getting a lot of downtime, this can cause miscommunications in the brain, especially if your circadian rhythms are off. Now, I'm talking about circadian rhythms in relation to light and dark, but also your eating schedule is a big circadian rhythm issue too for your body. And your hormones do become released in relation to a rhythm. So it's very interesting that I find that nerves and hormones are directly related to light and dark, but also our basic functions of eating. And so a lot of times when I'm working to fix complex issues with hormones, with someone who's overstressed and can't seem to get out of fight or flight mode, I've got to go back to their routines and habits. And so today I'm going to talk a lot in this podcast about how certain habits that you may have even right now may be negatively affecting your circadian rhythms. So let's talk a little bit about some history on circadian rhythms a bit. But before we go to that, I better tell you a little bit more as to where that conductor is in terms of when light's coming in and affecting us. Where is the receptor? Where are those conductors? It's really part of your medial frontal lobe, so literally behind your forehead. So think of it that way, so you have a space to kind of keep in mind. Now, the other thing is that light also affects your hippocampus, which is in charge of memory, and it also affects your thalamus, which is connected to relay of messages in the brain. And so not only do we have issues with hypothalamus, the conductor of all of our hormones, we also can have issues with relay of information and memory. And so a lot of people, when their circadian rhythms are off, they'll often complain a lot about having poor memory, poor recall of words, difficulty concentrating. Oftentimes with females, we associate this with menopause. Menopause is a change in your circadian rhythm because we're changing hormones. We're losing some hormones. They're declining. We also tend to have sleep issues with menopause. And so if you feed that back to kind of putting the pieces together here, well, if we have our circadian rhythms off and we're not sleeping like we should and we're up in the middle of the night and we're freaking out trying to figure out how to get ourselves to sleep, well, we are sending messages back to the thalamus, so relay messages and messages to our hippocampus for memory, and we're messing with those things. So what happens is we have a cascade of things being thrown off. So having your circadian rhythms balanced can also help with memory, cognition, relay of information, sharpness in terms of being able to recall quickly, but also in terms of being able to react quickly to certain stimuli. So just think about that for a minute. All right, so if we go to the history, we actually have been studying circadian rhythms since 1729. There was a researcher named Jean-Jacques d'Hortus de Meyrin. Super long name. I'm sure I butchered it. I'm not proficient in French names. But he found that a certain plant known as the Mimosa pudica, otherwise known as the shame plant, which I find really odd, it's a plant in the legume family, so the bean family, it actually had continued its daily rhythms in the dark. And so this guy, John, we'll call him for short since his name's way too freaking long, he found that, this plant has some kind of rhythm. And so we started to think a little bit more about circadian rhythms as related to plants in 1729. And 200 years later, Colin Pittenwright started studying fruit flies. Now, if you studied biology or even took a biology course, you're going to hear about that guy, because fruit flies have been the most commonly studied species, I would say, venture to say, almost in the universe in terms of biology. Drosophila is their name, if you want to get technical, in terms of fruit flies. But Colin Pittenwright really ended up being the father of the biological clock, as he was observing all of the effects of the circadian rhythms in these fruit flies back in the 1920s. So kind of cool to get back and know that we've been trying to figure out circadian rhythms since the 1700s. And then in the early 1900s, we kind of started to figure it out through fruit flies. And then now, of course, we've transferred it to human and mice studies, a lot of rodent studies with circadian rhythm in particular. And interesting studies, and I've linked to some of them in my podcast notes at drjkrausnd.com. I highly recommend you check those out. So why are circadian rhythms so important, and why is it important to regulate them? Well, because the circadian rhythms really govern our behavior. Like I said before, they're in charge of hormone production, they're in charge of memory, they're in charge of being able to relay messages to the brain properly. Maybe I'm not saying things 100% correctly. I wouldn't say 100% in charge of memory, but our hormones do dictate our behavior and our mood, and how we respond to circadian rhythms do determine what we're going to do in a certain time. Like, for example, when it's light out, we're not supposed to sleep. When it's dark out, we're supposed to sleep. We wind down, we relax. When it's dark out, we're more active. When it's daylight, so that's kind of what you want to be thinking about in terms of behavior, but also in terms of eating and hunger, exercise also. It all determines moods as well. Our body temperature also is something that can determine behavior, because when we're cold, that sends a message to our brain that we're not as active. When we're warm, we're being active. And so that can change a lot of things. But if you have a condition such as hypothyroidism that affects your body temperature, or you are in menopause and it affects your body temperature, having hot flashes, that can throw off your circadian rhythm. So I'm giving you some ideas as how you can see how this can go off the rails. Basically, your own idiosyncrasies and rhythms you've created with habits affect your circadian rhythm. Now, what I like to talk with folks about is these habits you've created, are they good? Are they bad? And essentially, are they good for your master clock? Are they good for your circadian rhythm? Because a lot of times all folks come into my office, they're complaining of weight gain, they're complaining of mood swings, they're complaining of hormonal imbalances, maybe they have stress reactions. Well, what do you think got you there? Most of us are not going to end up gaining weight over time because it just happened. Something has to go off the rails, whether it's eating excessively at certain times, or if we've created hormonal imbalances within our body based on our eating schedule, our stress amounts, eating late, overeating, not sleeping on a schedule, not exercising, burning the candle at both ends. I mean, you can create hormonal imbalances from that. You can create lots of different communication imbalances within your brain and your master clock or conductor, if you will. So a lot of people will ask me in my office, so if your circadian rhythm is off, can that make you fat? Yes. And in fact, it's one of the main reasons for why there's a lot of folks out there touting the intermittent fasting. So your liver shuts down at night. And what it's doing is it's not working to produce enzymes for energy. It's not working to detox. It's not doing those sorts of things. It's in fact working on storage and repair overnight. So I guess shutting down is probably not the best word. Let's just say that your liver changes. From the daytime, it's all about energy and keeping things going. And in the evening, it's all about storage and recovery. If you eat too late at night, you're going to have messages sent throughout your body for storage because your body's in storage mode at night. And so this is really where that concept of not eating too late at night comes from. Because your liver is running off of signals of circadian rhythm related to light and dark. In some cultures, such as in the European cultures, and in particularly in Spain, it's very popular to eat dinner at like 10, 11 o'clock at night. I don't think that's the best thing for circadian rhythm, since the brain knows that when it's dark, it's rest time. It's rest and digest and store versus energize and move and do stuff. So this consideration of time-restricted feeding, where perhaps you've heard of this, it's a lot of people use it for dieting. You're eating between an 8 and 12 hour window during the day, and you fast between a 12 and 14 hour window in the evening. I find that this is extremely helpful for stressed folks. I find it extremely helpful for folks that are chronic overeaters and folks who are trying to lose weight. And the reason being is because if we can get a fast going on, and I'm not talking about anything crazy. I mean, this is like stop eating by 7 and start eating the next day by 7 or 9 a.m. 7 to 7 would be 12 hours, obviously, and 7 to 9 would be 14. I actually do this every single day. I make sure that from dinner till breakfast, I have 12 hours always in between. I've actually found that if I eat between an 8 to 12 hour window during the day, so even 8 to 10 hour, I do tend to lose a little weight. My body is more effective at burning calories in that time span. Now, we have research that confirms that we can increase brown fat metabolic activity doing this sort of eating plan. And we can also decrease inflammatory factors that are stored in fat because we're going to be releasing fat and burning it versus being on chronic storage mode. The other big idea here is not overeating at your last meal of the day. And so having a bigger breakfast and a smaller dinner. Absolutely huge. And I found this with myself. I found this with multiple patients that this really works well. Unfortunately, we have a society that focuses on a bigger dinner, and sometimes we're skipping breakfast, sometimes we're doing the bulletproof breakfast, we're drinking coffee and putting some MCT oil in it, and while you might have a decent amount of fat in there and some calories, it's not a big meal per se to fuel you for the day. And circadian rhythm wise, we are set to eat more in the day so that we can burn that energy, and by nighttime, it's not about refueling and overeating. It's definitely eating, but if you eat too much at night, your body's got to deal with that. And if you've overloaded to the point where you're still metabolizing, you're going to have trouble falling asleep. You're going to have trouble with storage. And I think if I look at probably 75% of my patients, and even myself when I've struggled with weight, and even like right now, when I look at my schedule, I don't get home from work till about 6:30. That leaves me about a half hour to hurry up and get my food in. And sometimes I'm really starving if I've had gaps in my day where I didn't get my regular feeding schedule, if you will. And I always have 12 hours between dinner and breakfast. But the crux here is that sometimes I'm starving at night. I just feel like I need more food. And it's because I haven't filled myself properly throughout the day and I haven't eaten at regular intervals. So this is something to really, really think about, because overloading the gut, there's a ton of education in the Chinese medicine principle world about overloading the digestive system. And in particular, that the time of the stomach is between 5 and 7 p.m. in the evening. And another reason not to overload your stomach in the evening. I don't know if the Chinese were thinking about circadian rhythms, but the Chinese do have laid out time frames for each organ, almost as if it is a rhythm to your organs and throughout the day and night. So I don't know if that wisdom was even back there some 5,000 years ago when all of these principles of Chinese medicine and dietary therapy were written out, but it's starting to really make sense to me. And so I think there's a lot to this eating in between certain windows and watching portions and not eating too much at night and sleeping a heck of a lot better if you're not overloading at night, and especially if you're not overloading with food and then drinking alcohol on top of it, because alcohol does not help you to sleep properly. Yeah, it might get you sleepy, but it's not gonna, it messes with your liver. Once again, keeping in mind that your liver during the day is all about making energy and processing, and at night it's storage and chill kind of mode. And so if you're drinking alcohol and trying to get your liver to detox, it doesn't do so well. So it's kind of primed to store fat. And when do we usually end up drinking it? It's not usually during the daytime. I believe there's a song about it. It's 5 o'clock somewhere. So you have a 2 hour window to drink. No, I'm kidding. But it's something to think about. Just food for thought, always stuff that I like to do with this podcast. Get you thinking about things. Get you thinking about why you might have the issues that you have and help you to solve them. So what about exercise? I'm asked all the time, when should you exercise? When's the best time for you to exercise metabolically? Well, it does show in terms of compounded research on exercise that working out in the afternoon is actually better for circadian rhythms. But we've also found that consistent timing for exercise works well too. So what that means is if you're a morning exerciser, just make sure that you stay at the morning versus jumping all around. Same thing goes for the evening. If you're an evening exerciser, stay in that time frame. I think some of the biggest issues that people run into is if you evening exercise, it's sometimes a struggle to get home within time to have dinner. And some people after exercising are still pretty darn hungry and they'll tend to overeat after exercising. And so it's one of those things that you have to think about balancing out and making sure you get enough fuel during the day prior to your exercise so that after the exercise, you're not consuming ridiculous amounts of food. Now, a couple of other really interesting things that I think about with exercise is that there's over 800 genes in your muscles associated with circadian rhythms. That's freaking cool. Meaning that your muscles and your tissue respond to habits and ritual. When I work on people as an acupuncturist, I feel that muscles feel different. I feel that the fascial tissue feels different in folks who aren't sleeping, folks who are stressed. There's a different feel to the muscles, and it's often like kind of dehydrated, sticky kind of feeling. And so I find that interesting. There's no research out on that. I'd love to poll some of my other friends, and I have talked to a few massage therapists, especially the gal and I that work closely together in my office. She and I have talked about it. And yeah, there are interesting rhythms with muscle tissue. So something to think about there. Also, interesting rhythms with circadian rhythms and folks who have hormonal issues and how their muscles feel. A lot of pain, chronic pain and issues with the thyroid. A lot of chronic pain when we start getting into menopause too. So something to think about a little bit. Now, I've talked about exercise. I've talked about sleep. I've talked about food and eating. Temperature changes can make a really interesting effect on the body. Now, when you're warmer, your body is sending messages to your circadian rhythm, otherwise known as your conductor of everything, that suprachiasmic nucleus, that you're awake if we're warmer. If you're cooler, you're at rest. Now, a lot of people don't even think about this, but the temperature of a room affects our sleep. Now, obviously, on a simplified level, some of us really know that we need to have our room cool to sleep better. Some people like a window open. But sometimes it's just the slight differences in temperature. Wearing too much clothing to bed, having a hot shower, then jumping into a warm bed with too much clothes. These are things that can provoke issues with circadian rhythm and affect your sleep. So ending a shower with a cooler temperature can help with better sleep. Wearing less clothes to bed, better sleep. Opening a window, getting air in. Interesting stuff, because you want to prep your body for sleep. And we've seen a lot of research lately about how we're wimps having temperatures of our homes and temperatures are always warm. And in fact, being afraid to get too cold. And when in fact, being colder can actually help with circadian rhythms. Now, what I'm talking about is cooler in the evening, warmer during the day. A lot of us will tend to light a fire in the house in the evening and make the house super toasty warm. That's not as good as actually letting the temperature of the home cool naturally. So think about old school days when we didn't have heat, when we lived in caves and we only had fires and we had light and dark. Yes, those fires were for food there to keep us slightly warm, but there's still some really good connections as humans in our circadian rhythms to warmer during the day because it's day and night, or, you know, colder during the night because it's night, and keeping that rhythm intact. Now, when you have things like Raynaud's, which is a condition that affects your circulation in your hands, or when you have hypothyroidism, you have some issues with regulation of temperature. And because thyroid issues are so common, I find that there's so many people with thyroid conditions that have sleep disorders. Same thing goes along the lines of folks who are stressed. A lot of times when we're stressed, we might end up with circulation issues that will affect our circadian rhythm. Same thing goes along the lines with menopause. Night sweats are very common at night. Night sweats are very common at night. Listen to me. Oh my goodness. Sorry about that. Yes, night sweats oftentimes will throw off circadian rhythm, but also, you know, it's one of those chicken and the egg things. Did a circadian rhythm going off the rails cause the night sweats? I tend to see more night sweats happen when we change temperatures. So when we're going from spring to summer and when we're going from summer to fall, because people are not regulating their houses, keeping it at consistent temperatures. You know, they might use air conditioning all the time. Keeping your house cool all the time puts your body into thinking that it needs to be sleepy, so it could be actually affecting your energy levels. Keeping your house too warm could also be, if you go past a certain extent. So what am I trying to say here without really confusing folks? Well, having inconsistent temperatures related to day and nighttime may actually contribute to hormonal imbalances in the body. So for example, the main thing here that I'm alluding to is if you keep your room and nighttime temperature too warm, you might actually be impeding your body's metabolic capabilities overnight to help rest and restore. And during the day, if you're keeping the temperature too cool, you may be also affecting things. So being warmer during the day and cooler at night is a big deal. And I think we should kind of start to think about this in terms of treating hormonal imbalances, menopause, and thyroid issues. Really dialing in temperature regulation and keeping it consistent in terms of temperatures within the home, within the workplace. So something to think about there. In fact, warm body temperatures are associated with low estrogen. And so if you already have low estrogen because you're entering into menopause and then you try to keep your bedroom super warm, we've got another issue that's going to wake you up at night. So got to have a talk with your partner and everybody who's in the bedroom with you, whether it's the kiddos too, and even your dogs. You want to consider, you know, making sure that you're not getting too warm at night and keeping that temperature right. Now, has there been any research on what temperatures should things be? You bet you there has been. In fact, the temperature 60 to 67 degrees is researched as being the best sleep temp. And making sure that you are not wearing too many things to sleep and keeping the temperature at that 60, 67, wherever you are sleeping. I know way too many people that have their homes up over 70 at night and so many blankets and things of that nature. So go in a little rogue and letting yourself get a little cool at night, which can be really annoying to someone with thyroid conditions or Raynaud's, but after time you can get used to it and you might sleep a heck of a lot better. So here's another thing. Endocrine hormones. So these are the same hormones that are related to fight or flight. They're also related to estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. But in particular, we're talking about glucocorticoids in this case. Your adrenal glands produce glucocorticoids. These are related to blood sugar balance. They're also related to hormone response to cortisol. So if you have your sleep and wake cycles on point, because cortisol wakes us up and melatonin is what's going to put us to bed. If we have an imbalance, say we're not producing enough cortisol because our adrenal glands are under functioning, they're pooped out, they're tired, then we're going to have circadian rhythm issues. How did we end up with circadian rhythm issues because of the adrenal glands? Well, here's the thing. It's a chicken or egg type of deal. One could contribute to the other, or one could have provoked the other. Now, I seem to be talking in circles. Let's put it this way. Stress affects cortisol levels. The more stress you've had, the more compounded traumas in life, and I don't mean the huge traumas, it could be little traumas. The more that you have this in life, the more you can end up having trouble with cortisol release, because the body finally, you know, will finally get tired of pumping out cortisol. And the more that you've had trauma, maybe you've, you know, whenever it's occurred, your body remembers these things. But the more that you say, for example, you have insomnia for days on end, or you've been burning the midnight oil and staying up late, this is directly going to mess with your circadian rhythms. Obviously, because if you don't sleep on proper schedules, you're not eating right, all these different things that go along with being stressed out, then you're going to end up compounding your circadian rhythm issues. But if you have low release of cortisol, now you're taking out the factor of cortisol waking you up and putting you to sleep over time. So now we have two factors. You have the effect of stress, so the side effect of stress over long periods of time, but you also have the effect of keeping your circadian rhythm out of regulation. That's going to compound the situation. So what's the answer to this is keep your cortisol in check using adaptogenic herbs. And what that means is using herbs like licorice root, Siberian ginseng, holy basil, ashwagandha, rhodiola. All of these different herbs are really great for helping you to regulate your circadian rhythms. It helps you to deal with stress, but in particular helps you to regulate and your cortisol levels and dealing with life basically as it is. So if you feel like you're stressed out and you're not sleeping because you're stressed, you're overeating because you're stressed, and especially at night, you're emotionally eating at night, you're burning the candle at both ends, maybe you're trying to finish an MBA and you're working full-time during the day and you have kids, this is another freaking reason to get your stress in check and start enjoying life a little bit more and relaxing. Because when you have this vicious cycle of you're causing your circadian rhythm to be off because of your lifestyle, but then your circadian rhythm is further becoming off because now we have hormonal imbalance, this is a big issue and really the root of why it's so difficult to come back from being extremely stressed. So there you have it. All right, so I have kind of had diarrhea of the mouth in terms of all the circadian rhythm business, and I think it's worth it to tell you what to do to kind of work on resetting your rhythm, because I think a lot of people are now probably like, oh my God, what do? I'm, you know, overeating at night. I'm not sleeping like I should. My house might be way too warm at night. Anyway, what do you do? First and foremost, every fall and going into the winter, no matter where you live, you're going to have shorter days, and especially in the northern hemisphere. Or if you are in Alaska, in some places, you might not see light very much at all. Anyway, you need a light therapy. How to do that? I have a Verilux Happy Light. It's a tablet size. It was like $100. Probably my best purchase ever to get me through from fall and winter until we get to spring and the days start to get longer. We need light. And typically what I'm doing in this case is giving myself 20 minutes of that light box every morning. And I'm not staring at it. It's just on while I am hanging out and making my breakfast and getting the day started. So if you suffer from seasonal affective disorder, I highly recommend getting a light therapy box and using it in the morning. You don't need it any other time of the day. You need it in the morning to just kind of help wake up your circadian rhythms. And you'd be like, ooh, here's the light. We're waking up now. Especially if you live somewhere like Seattle where it's super dark in the morning in the fall and winter, where we have a lot of marine layer, and it can be quite dreary and dark until mid-afternoon, and sometimes it doesn't get light all stinking day. I grew up in the Chicago area, and we're pretty darn gray too in the fall and winter, and so it's not a huge difference. Seattle gets the bad rap for it, but I don't remember. I mean, basically, between Chicago and Seattle, the big difference is, yeah, it rains here a little bit more and we have more misty kind of darkness that's slightly darker, but Chicago's still darn gray in the fall and winter. And so useful to have a light box even there. Now, the other biggie on the terms of light is to stop the blue light. That's what you're getting from all your devices, your tablets, your phones, by at least 7 or 8 p.m. to support melatonin production by 9 p.m. You really want to keep to this and set a schedule of it. No screen time 1 hour before bed. I typically try to have folks in bed by 10 at the latest, so that you've got optimal melatonin production. So we're going old school, right? Using that hour before bed to stretch, to do mobility work, to do some yoga, spend time chatting with the family, just relaxing. You don't have to be doing things all the time. Sometimes I have folks taking melatonin between 1 and 3 grams a night, or milligrams, not grams, 1 to 3 milligrams a night, and sometimes even a little 5-HTP, 50 to 100 milligrams at night to help you with getting to sleep, and then using your light therapy box to help you to wake up. Now, keep in mind, melatonin can be a little bit of a problem for some folks, so starting with a lower dosage is always ideal, and ramping up as you go. I have everybody on vitamin D 10,000 IU starting October till May. I don't care who you are, where you live. If you live in the northern hemisphere and you're not getting exposed to light during the day on a regular basis and it's more gray, 10,000 IU vitamin D. Do it. It'll help you. It'll help with mood. It'll help with the immune system. You will feel better. Eating. Don't eat after 7 p.m., I can't express this enough. I've found for a lot of people, especially if you're struggling with weight, you're consistently gaining weight, that 7 p.m. is the witching hour. And keep dinner as your smallest meal. Do more food for breakfast. Try to fast for 12 to 14 hours from dinner to breakfast. See how it goes. A lot of people are really into the intermittent fasting thing, but I think it's a good idea. I don't know if 16 to 22 hours of fasting here and there is great all the time for folks who are stressed out and have some circadian rhythm issues. I do find it great for working on the gut and other things like weight loss, but just getting a rhythm down of 12 hours at the minimum, 14 at the max, between dinner and your breakfast. The other biggie is getting a schedule for food. Eat consistently. This will give your brain a break. It's not going to have to worry about when you're going to have food, but it also balances blood sugar. You are still a caveman. Your body likes schedule. So breakfast like 8, lunch by noon or 1, dinner 5 or 6, call it good. Throw some snacks in there if you want. Regulating body temperature. Like I said before, showers with hot and cold end on slightly cool. Let's just not say cold. That sounds scary. Slightly cool versus really super hot showers, especially when you're going to bed in the evening. 60 to 67 degrees to go to bed. Don't wear a shit ton of clothing. Excuse my language. But I talk to ladies who are having hot flashes and going through menopause, and they're wearing pants and sweatshirts and socks to bed. and their bedroom's 72 degrees. Well, shoot, I'd be hot flashing with, like, drenched in sweat if that was the case. You want to keep that bedroom cooler. Talk to your partners. Like, just let everybody know you do better when you sleep in a cooler environment. Get your thyroid checked is another recommendation. I really do think that the thyroid has a lot to do with how you regulate your circadian rhythms, because your thyroid can mess with your hot and cold body temperatures and your circulation. And I recommend everybody, even guys, look at the thyroid. You want to look at free T3, free T4, TSH, which is your thyroid stimulating hormone, and look at your antibodies. You want to make sure you're not attacking your thyroid. So anti-TPOs, which are antibodies to the enzyme that converts T4, the thyroid hormone T4, to T3, and thyroglobulin antibody. This is an antibody directly to your thyroid. Get those checked. If you have a slower thyroid, then use thyroid support by Gaia Herbs, eat some more seaweed, work on those kind of things. If you're extremely fatigued, you want to work on boosting cortisol during the day and working on melatonin at night. And I like to use adaptogenic herbs. One of my favorite combinations is known as HPA Access Maintenance by Gaia Herbs. Take two in the morning, take one at lunch. If you're really super pooped, take two in the morning, two at lunch, and see how you do. Work on an evening melatonin boosting protocol, like I said before, 1 to 3 milligrams of melatonin and 50 to 100 milligrams of 5-HTP can be really beneficial about 2 hours before bed, especially to help you to get your circadian rhythm back and reset. Exercise, extremely important. I do recommend 4 to 5 days a week getting in some exercise. Strength training is actually found to be one of the most beneficial exercises for resetting your circadian rhythm, not straight up cardio. HIIT, so high intensity workouts, that is high intensity interval training, that can be extremely useful as well for resetting your circadian rhythms, because high intensity interval training is not a long grind. It's quick, fast, and slow workouts. And like I said before, consistent exercise. If you're going to exercise in the morning, do it at the same time every morning. If you're going to exercise in the evening, fine, do it at the same time. Just don't be jumping all over the place, like sometimes morning, sometimes afternoon, sometimes evening. This messes with your circadian rhythm. Keep in mind, we're creatures of habit, and setting good, consistent habits is the key to resetting your circadian rhythm for longevity and happiness. The last but not least, as I always talk about this, stress management, breathing, doing what you love, goofing off, smiling, laughing, spending time with your family, off your freaking technology. Go old school. Have your family or yourself and your partner go do a technology cleanse for a weekend. Everyone puts down their screens. You will be shocked how good you stinking feel. Reconnect with nature. Do some forest bathing. Go do a hike. Whatever you can do to get out and have some fun. Hula hooping. Whatever it may be. Just channel your inner five-year-old and work on unwinding and having some fun. The other big thing about stress management is unwinding after your work day. You really have to focus consistently for longevity, in my book, and what I've seen over and over again with the healthiest folks and the research, is you really have to focus on waking yourself up well and putting yourself to bed well, just as if you were a kiddo. Just how mom would be like, rise and shine. And then, you know, you see the sun, you wake up and life is great. And then you have the evening in terms of nighty-night, put yourself to bed. Unwind from the day. Don't try to go to bed wound up. It just doesn't work very well. Literally detoxing from your day. You have your small dinner, you have your time with your family, and maybe you go for a walk in the evening and then you go to bed. Maybe you take a bath and put some candles up and you chill in your bathtub and unwind. Maybe it's yoga. Maybe it's drawing. Maybe it's a little painting. Whatever it is, it's a release to help you unwind from the day. I really highly recommend it, because I think a lot of us just don't know how to turn off the go, 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 do, do, do. So look into that. Now, I will have that whole list that I just spewed off in terms of how to reset your circadian rhythm in my show notes at drjkrausnd.com. I've also highlighted all of my resources, so the research studies that I reviewed to create this podcast, and I linked all of those in the show notes so you can geek out some more if you are interested in geeking out some more on resetting your circadian rhythm. But really, the takeaway from this podcast that I want you to have in the back of your mind is that we are all creatures of habit. We can create negative habits that throw off our circadian rhythm. So you're wanting to look at habits that benefit you, habits that you can create, that you can sustain, and you can do consistently. Because we are much more healthy when we are aligned with the rhythms that our body is naturally primed to have, and that we are naturally kind of falling into ones that seem to fit. So I highly recommend you look at your little idiosyncrasies, you look at the habits you've created from how you wake up to what you do when you wake up, how your day goes in terms of eating on a schedule, exercising on a schedule, temperature regulation on a schedule, and how you wind down from your day and how much you eat in the evening. These are big things. So take an assessment, see how all these things go, and start to create healthy, consistent, sustainable habits. You will start to find that your hormones will reset themselves. You will feel a lot happier, and life will just go a lot more smoothly. Alrighty. So if you've liked this podcast, or you want me to talk about more things in this realm, I love to hear from you. So make sure to give me a shout. Let me know what you're interested in. Let me know if you have questions. I'd love to hear from you folks out there and give you more of what you are interested in. So hit me up at drjkrausnd.com. You can always email me at info@drjkrausnd.com. Love to hear from you. And if you like this podcast, share it with your friends. I would love to keep getting the word out about how to make lives better and help you to weed through this crazy thing we call life. Alrighty, everybody, you have survived another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Jeanine Krause. Have a great day, whatever you're doing. Hey, everybody, Dr. Jeanine Krause here. If you liked what you heard today, then head over to drjkrausnd.com to find my free resources and information to know when I post something new that's juicy that you might want to check out. Plus, head over to where you get your podcasts and like, subscribe, and write a review to help get the word out about me and help others at the same time to find me. It really does help, and I really appreciate all of your reviews.